Hello world family, and welcome to Ripples of Humanity. I'm Rachel Thompson, and through this podcast I'm sharing interesting stories along my travels of people, projects and initiatives I discover that are contributing to positive ripples throughout humanity. In this episode, I am taking you to Kolkata, the capital city of the state of West Bengal in the east of India. So although Kolkata is known as the City of Joy, it is also known as having one of the largest red light districts in Asia and one of India's largest trafficking hubs. Today I'll be speaking to Smarita Sengupta, the founder of the NGO Destiny Reflection, which began in 2007. The aim of Destiny is to disrupt the cycles of sexual exploitation and human trafficking in Kolkata. Destiny and Smarita have won numerous awards nationally and internationally for its work, and I'm really excited to share the conversation with Smarita today. Just firstly, I first met Smarita in 2016, so 8 years ago now. It was my second trip to India, and this time in India I planned to stay for 6 months. And I just finished my month-long yoga teacher training that was in Rishikesh, and I knew that I wanted to stay in one place after that and volunteer somewhere for the remaining 5 months. But at that time, I had no idea where or what I wanted to do. I had previously heard of Kolkata because I shared a mutual friend with someone who was living in Kolkata and started an NGO there. But I knew nothing about this city of over 15 million people, and I just had a feeling that Kolkata was where I needed to be. And I had a feeling I needed to be working with children. So after some online research, I was led to this NGO called New Light Foundation. And I reached out to them. And then before I knew it, I was on a plane to Kolkata. So just briefly, New Light Foundation have many, many programs that support children and youth of sex workers and at-risk children and youth in Kolkata. It was then through New Light that I met Smarita and some of the women from Destiny at an event. Smarita, I remember, had this really bright, enthusiastic and warm energy about her. And she invited me to come along and see what Destiny was all about. So I made some time to visit Destiny and to get a real feel for what the organisation was about. And I was so glad I did. I remember when I arrived there, I just felt so welcomed and warm. I also fell in love with the social enterprise branch of Destiny, where women survivors of trafficking are trained and then employed to make really beautiful products that are sold nationally and internationally, and profits are then redirected back into Destiny. For those who are close to me or have come to my yoga classes, you probably know about or own one of the handmade yoga mat bags made from recycled sari material. And so it was a really funny story. When I first went to Destiny and saw the yoga mat bags, I just found them so beautiful, and I wanted to bring some back to Australia to see if I could sell them. So I bought about 20 bags, and then when I was going back to Australia, I tried to put them all in my luggage. It was such a scene at the airport, because turns out my luggage was too heavy and they were going to charge me like $300 excess for the luggage, and I didn't want to pay that. So I didn't want to get rid of the yoga mat bags. So I was at the airport unloading stuff, and I just remember having so many yoga mat bags like sprawled across the floor of the airport, and all my belongings everywhere, just trying to work out what to throw out, what I needed to take back to Australia, what I might be able to leave in a small bag in India for a friend to come and collect. So it all worked out. In the end, I left a small bag with some of my belongings that a friend came to the rescue, and I would hope that I'd come back to India one day to collect it. It turns out over 2 years later, I returned to Kolkata and reunited with my bag. So that was great. But I had room then for the... weight left for the yoga mat bags and for the necessities that I needed to bring back to Australia. So that was definitely an experience. And then over the years, when I got back to Australia, over the years, I think I sold and gifted over 100 of the yoga mat bags to people. And it just brings me so much joy when I see someone in my hometown, Geelong, using one of the bags, and every time I would sell one of the bags, it just brought me right back to Destiny and the cause and what they're doing. And yeah, it's a really special organisation, and I hope you enjoy the conversation I have with Smarita to learn a bit more. And once again, India got me, and during the conversation with Smarita, there were some unavoidable construction noises going on in the background. So I did the best I could to minimise the sound without damaging the audio quality too much. But it's all a big learning process for me, trying to edit out background noise. And if anyone has any good recommendations for reducing background noise without damaging the audio quality too much, then please let me know. I am open to any teachings. Thank you. And apologies again for that disruption in the conversation with Smarita. Thank you so much for joining me, Smarita. When I first had the vision for doing this podcast, you were one of the people that came into my mind as someone who I actually really wanted to speak to. Since I've met you, you've been someone who's really inspired me and remembered the energy you bring to your work and the cause that you're working for. And it's been, it's made a powerful impact on my life when I first met you.
Yeah, I still remember. The day we met, the time we met.
Yeah. I'd love to start by taking a step back in time to when you first envisioned Destiny Reflection coming. And what inspired you? What was your motivation?
Very interesting question. And I would say, it is about what bothers you. I think there used to be several things which has been bothering me when I have growing up years, going to college or maybe the first break somewhere as an intern, volunteer, etc. So I think the first botheration was the discrimination, why few people are like that and why there's so much of clusters and kind of divides, and also some toxic people, toxic environment. Those were all what I gathered, from at different stages of life. Anyway, and I think that turned into choosing, I consider those experiences maybe when I had the opportunity to decide what I want to do, what I want to take up seriously. So this is how I would say Destiny came to me. And then I chose, kind of, both ways.
I like how you say destiny came to you. Yeah. And when you say that, what do you mean?
Yeah, by destiny is the name of the organization, as you know. Yeah. So I would rather say the work chose me and I also chose the work that happened together. So for a long time, I was very unclear. I opted for a couple of jobs, completed my education. And then I felt, I didn't feel why I'm doing this and I'm not getting the kind of interest I should be. I used to do every work, I used to do very carefully, properly, perfectly. That was my trend. But, the other part was missing, the content.
Yeah.
And I thought I have a lot of energy to do something else, something more. And what is that?
Were you working in the... for an NGO or in the social sector?
Yeah, I got into, because I started working in a very young age. I did small job when I was in college also. So I was very much into that work. So I was gathering experience rather. So when I landed a non-profit, and I had hardly any clue what non-profits are. Except that they're giving agencies to give, apart from that. And then I faced some toxic part of it also, a lot of questions, why this, why not this, etc., etc. And then I've met a couple of women, young children in the red light area, And then I went for a raids also, rescuing small children, with the police, of course, from the brothel, etc., red light area or private houses where they had been trafficked or en route to trafficking, etc.
Were these in Kolkata? Or other
areas? Those were in Kolkata and in suburbs also, around Kolkata. So every bit, you know, like made me think, question. And then I went to the root cause. I got to know why is this happening. Like, why they, why not me, or why not someone else? Then I realized that it is society is responsible, and there is something which we can do. And this cause is, and the reason of the cause is hidden in our society in different way. So this is how I got to start, and then it took shape, and now we are here. We are 15, 16 years old.
Wow.
And the journey is also big, big learning.
Yeah.
From there.
I can imagine you faced some challenges along the way.
Yeah, of course, of course.
What's been in creating a NGO and starting it from, you started it from scratch. It was your baby you started. Yeah. What was the biggest challenge to get it started?
I think the missing part, I never thought I will, I wanted to contribute to this, but that doesn't mean that I'll have to start something and own something or lead something. So it it pushed me, because I saw some gaps I noticed, and I always felt like this could have been done that way, this way. So that was one of the reasons. And the second hesitation was, you know, like, questioning myself, am I able to do it? You know, my God, I'm going to start an organization. That is something. So then I found a couple of people around me who actually say that, why don't you do it? You can do it, actually. So that's a big piece, that one line, that you can do it.
Yeah. Who were those people? Do you remember?
I still remember. I met a Canadian professor. He's my age, kind of. We became close, and then I used to tell her about the frustrations. And she came as a volunteer here to work with different charities, etc. And she also, like, we were kind of at the same page, like. And then suddenly she said, "I think you'll do a better job." I said, "Me?" I said, "Yes. Why not you?" Yes, I'm very much in touch with those people. And I mean, I'm very lucky that way, that she's not the only one, or the, she may be the first one, if I could remember. But, and then I continuously kept meeting people who thinks the same way.
Yeah. Do you feel like you were guided to meet those people?
I believe in that. I believe in hard work. I believe in planning strategy also, but at the same time there are divine interventions also, which happens all together.
So what was one of the first things you did when you were starting Destiny to get it going off the ground from the very beginning?
Setting up the organization.
So
I got involved even before there was a transition, kind of setting up the organization, or I'm already into the work. And I remember I happened to bring a survivor girl to my house, and I didn't plan it that way. It just happened. She needed a place, and then I brought her home. So I made several small, you know, experiences which became very meaningful at the later stage of time. So when I started the organization, I think I had to do a lot of registration work, etc., which took a lot of time. But I think we kept on working even before we were actually registered on paper, etc. I kept on working because I was involved, and I had been, you know, been into it.
And what did that work look like at that time?
It is a lot of, like, I won't say counseling, I think talking to people. I mean, they would reach out for some problem solving, solutions, or
the next steps, finding. So that way I was very much involved. And then we got connected with a couple of shelter homes.
And if you could explain shelter homes.
Mm-hmm. Different shelter homes where, young girls, they mostly were rescued from trafficking net or orphan or have some family problem or domestic violence. So they are generally housed by the government or non-government homes. So generally it could be 0 to 18 years of any age girls. So by the time I have already been started going to those shelter homes and developed relationship with many of the children and young adults. So even though there were no funds, I kept going. Fund was not a problem. Like I could go and meet them. That was one part of it. And then already by the time I knew a bunch of them, they needed work. And then we started the production unit. And only thing they know is handwork or something, handicraft, creative work, etc. So we started that. And that was in the planning process, in the thought process, because we realized that income generation is a very important, crucial thing. Your own income gives you dignity, gives you a voice, helps you decide for yourself, decision making, so combat violence or resist exploitation. For me, I always thought that livelihood generation is the first thing which can follow with several other. And then we started the production unit immediately. And we, by the time, we also parallelly had the relationships, as I mentioned, with the shelter homes, the young, the children, and the young adults. And then we started the unit with 5 girls and a small setup. And I found someone who were willing to support it also by that time. Supported financially a little bit, so that when we are independent, we won't need that.
Yeah. What's your experience been like with funding Destiny?
This is interesting. So I knew from the very beginning, before I started, that that funding won't be easy. Why would people give me money? I haven't proved anything. So I was prepared. That why would people give me money? That was, I always had that big question. So, and then again some incident happened and funding came to us. Like from the people who I met, who were around me. And so I think the problem was not only one level. I think funding challenge was later because I didn't need a lot of money to start to do that. So we gathered that money to pay for a rent and have start a production unit, and we got the first order also, first one or two jobs. So I would say it wasn't the only problem. I think I realized the problems were, the first problem was, I think, to develop myself. Because I realized very soon that I have taken a big responsibility. And it is not only like, that, okay, I dream about that. And so I thought I need to, skill myself and increase our network. And so that was my first realization. Also understand the issue deeply.
And I'd love to talk about the issue. So the issue that the Destiny Reflection is trying to address and where that fits into the broader systemic issue of trafficking.
It is a deep level question you have asked. So that also took me some time to understand. As I mentioned, we just only know the, the top side. I could see the people suffering, or I could see this is like modern slavery is a largest illegal profit-making business in the world. So those information came to me, as I was working. And then my curiosity got deeper and learned more about this. So it is definitely systemic. It is in the system. And modern slavery is quite broad. It also covers, you know, cheap labors, cheap clothes, and which is everywhere, all over the world. So which means clearly that some people are making money and some people are getting exploited out of that.
Yeah.
So that became very clear to us. And also that the organization like us, we are fighting for it. We need a ecosystem to get supported. Otherwise, I don't think I can, you know, fight for a crime which is so big, large, all over the world.
Yeah.
So then the realization came that I can do it myself, alone or in a small team. It has to be in a bigger, I have to expand the circle.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out of India also. It happened through some fellowships, etc. I was able to cross the border.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is it, how. Like we also expanded our network.
Yeah.
Because the crime we are challenging is big. So we also need a bigger strength and circle.
And have you found networks are being welcoming to that collaboration?
Definitely yes and no both. Because everywhere, you know, if one network is already very established and suddenly I want to get in, again you haven't proved yourself.
Mm.
Why would they partner with you, or why would they fund you, or why would they, you know, collaborate with you? That has always remained a big challenge. And also, it has not been an easy task for me. But at the same time, I think I broke that challenge through individual people who I was able to enroll them into my mission. And my network also expanded through the leadership courses I got selected.
Mm.
Ford Fellowship and Global Women Leadership Network. Those gave me exposures to meet people. And there I found some like-minded people and also people with same vision.
Yeah.
So that helped me break those barriers
gradually.
But till date, I think networking, partnership building is not really easy.
Yeah.
It isn't easy. And especially with different stakeholders. If I'm in non-profit to non-profit, it is different. If I want to talk to other stakeholders, it is not easy. It's challenging.
Yeah, yeah. What's been your biggest personal challenge you've had to overcome in this journey?
I think personal challenge, I went through a lot of health challenges. And not only me, my family also. That is biggest. I got into stroke situation several times. That is one of the challenge. And I said continuously building myself. I don't have a degree of a international big university or something. I'm educated. I do have degrees, but I realize like people are better than me. They're presenting better. So continuously, you know, developing yourself. I won't say it's a challenge, but it was hard work to do that. And especially like I never left my country, left India. So for my work, when I left India for the first time, I landed to US or UK. Then again, I'm adopting, I'm learning. And so that is professional challenge and personal level.
What did you study?
I studied in Kolkata in business, commerce.
Commerce, yeah.
I also learned some coding, etc., which I never utilized that way. Personal challenge, I think that is like continuously develop myself so that I fit into it. I never tried to fit into myself totally, honestly. I wanted to stay how I am.
Yeah, that's something that I feel from you, is this real authenticity about you.
Yeah.
And I wonder, how have you, in having to be in the spotlight a little bit more than maybe what you'd like, how have you maintained your authenticity in that process?
I think I was really, at one point of time, I thought I will have to be like them, like flawlessly, presenting flawlessly about in a stage or somewhere. And or also when we were, you know, reached out from various media and news channel, then I don't know if like how proper I should look, speak, talk. Yeah, I think I was in a question in between that. like how much should I prepare myself, where I realized I don't want to lose myself completely by, you know, being like someone else. And I think here I would definitely mention that I'm really lucky to be surrounded by some family members and the people who have been supporting me, and it is they are from different part of the world, US, UK, and some Australians. So I think they continuously, I got some mentorship from them as well. They said, you are good how you are. Don't try to be like completely like them.
Yeah.
So some flaws are actually good.
That's good.
So then I think I stopped worrying. And I was feeling very tired also. I realized this is, I don't think I want to go beyond this, polishing myself.
Yeah. Good.
Like shoes, you know, polish. So I said, no, I don't want to be a shoe, like it's shining bright.
Yeah.
So that is it. But definitely I work on myself, but it would be more on knowledge gathering. And also I want to stay close to the issue, continuously I say, to the victims or the people who I'm working with, my colleagues, team members, my board members, wherever they are in whichever country. So I'm curious and I try to be, you know, useful for them.
That's good. And to where Destiny is now, what could you give a snapshot of how it's grown? And
I think it is exciting. So I think 2007 or 8 we got started, and then I had all the realization. I said, which way I go, I improve myself, polish myself, develop knowledge, network building. I realized that I've taken a big, huge decision. And then I think the first break was me getting through the leadership fellowship from US. So 2010, from 2008 or 7 to 2010, I think that was my first jump, first move. I got selected from whatever number of applicants, and the first time I landed to US, and I got into the fellowship program where I really value each and every member, their lifetime relationships I have built. You know?
Yeah. So, and was this a leadership fellowship?
It's Global Women Leadership Network.
Okay,
so that was my first first breakthrough. And that also happened through a volunteer girl who came to India to volunteer for us. And then she helped me reach out to these people. So that was first breakthrough. And then I think I came back really refreshed and better. And then 2013, I got awarded from this same group, Global Women Leadership Network, as a leader of impact. So that is another, you know, motivation, encouragement. So, and it, that happened through voting from different part of the world. And I got maximum vote. So that happened. And then 2013, again, I got a Ford Fellowship opportunity. Again, there was a huge application process, etc. And my application was selected. Again, I was, you know, told about this fellowship by someone from my network. And then 2015, suddenly, that was a little kind of unexpected surprise. Suddenly, we realized we got nominated for Indian of the Year in the public service.
Wow.
And that happened in 2015. The CNN, the name is CNN News 18 Indian of the Year. And there, I didn't get the award, but our organization was listed and the nomination. Which was like kind of okay, so what we are doing is okay.
Sounds like you're getting all these reassurances along the way.
Yeah.
And those networks that you've built, they were not going to say paying off, but they were, providing benefit because you're authentically building the network.
Exactly. And I think that is what I chose to be, not quick money or quick funding. I really wanted to have a solid ground of the work we are doing and a good relationship, as I mentioned, with everyone surrounding me and keeping our values intact. So it was not a quick kind of mission I went through. So that was, and in spite of all the challenges I said, in the challenges at home, health issues, and continuously, you know, fighting for like my skills, my knowledge, and also running an organization, funding challenges, selling product. So that happened in 2013 and then 2015 and then 2017 I got another award from the local Women Economic Forum. And then 2020 I got another award, which is from Delhi, and which was given by some of the ministers. And that came through a college, which Shivaji College in Delhi, Women Development Cell, from that cell. So these awards I'm talking about, again, these were, you know, consistently telling you that, yeah, it is okay. You are on the right track. And whatever we are doing is actually benefiting. At least some portion of our hard work is benefiting to us. And I think I would still say, and the people I had met through all the process, through the fellowships or through some partnership buildings, etc., those were like miracles in my life. So it's not only me that it is wrong. I maybe I'm facing the organization, in the face of that I'm taking, you know, everything in my plate and then managing, but I'm very lucky to have all the people who have been supporting me all through.
And then when you talk about the impact, because along the way you're getting these awards, but then behind those awards is obviously the impact of the work that you're doing. Could you talk a bit about the impact?
That also, you know, I was illusioned, like when I heard the numbers, when we look at our numbers, it's really small and not a big numbers, not in millions or etc. etc. Then again, I think we come up as a group and we discuss these challenges that, and then we realize that we are going longitudinal, which means we are staying with the survivor or the beneficiary for a long time, because we know the group we have chosen, they are you know, they're really broken and they're damaged mentally, physically, and they hardly have any skill to rebuild their life and career, which means the vulnerability returns to them more often than any of us. So which means that we have to stay with them for a longer time. So that way we are going, we are looking into the depth of the program rather than numbers, increasing the numbers. So now I think I'm content, I'm happy. Previously, it used to bother me a lot. So maybe one day we can, we will be able to keep both the quality and quantity. But right now, we are not able to. Till now, I think we are focusing on quality.
I think that's important, because you don't want to have, you don't want to overcommit and have too much, and then not be able to support, and then have that actually cause more harm.
Because one beneficiary or we also call them our partners, not actually beneficiaries. When we call them partner, then it becomes equal and empowering. So that way, if the girl is coming, if we are supporting a girl and she has a child, and then she has a family also, she has health issues, she has different, different challenges. So we take care of everything.
You look at it holistically.
And it is complicated, why I say, especially with the victims of trafficking, because you can only, you can, we can give her a skill training and then we can give her a job also. But maybe she doesn't have a place to stay, or she is a single mother, which means she may not be able to continue with the job or the skill training because she has other problems in her life. So we have to see that she is able to continue with the opportunities she is getting. So we take care of the child also, and sometimes we need other NGOs' help for that, because we can't do everything. So we see that the girl is, the her child is taken care of, her health, mental health, physical health, etc., her parents' condition, and so holistically we help her in the journey of recovery.
So could you take us on a bit of a journey to when someone, when you identify someone who needs the support, who's been trafficked, and you refer to them as a partner. So how, what's the journey of that person coming into destiny?
So I say that the plan cannot be same for everyone. It has to be tailored. It has to be tailored, because everyone, the problem is unique for each and every one. So I can tell you two case studies in brief.
Yeah.
So one was, this girl was trafficked at the age of 12, and then she was rescued at the age of 15 or something, and she landed a shelter home. This is generally what happens.
Mm.
And she became a mother at the age of 16. And then we provide care in the shelter home, where we find this kind of girls.
Mm.
And then when she turned 17, she came to Destiny for training. She completed her training by the age of 18, and she started her life again. But her trafficker, she also wanted to punish her trafficker, which is a big decision. Sometimes they are so broken with a baby and ill health and the trauma, mm-hmm. they're not able to decide to fight for the trafficker. In her case, her trafficker was I think disappeared for 7 years, and the case was pending.
Okay.
And then it took several more years to fight the case and prove the trafficker guilty. So she had gone through all the process, mm-hmm. being with Destiny. Because why? Because it helped her, because her child was being taken care of in a children's home where she had the opportunity to go and meet her, and then her family also was not scared because the trafficker was from that neighborhood. So she was, they were unable, the family was unable to bring the, get the girl home,
mm-hmm.
and the trafficker was moving around, you know, disappeared, but that doesn't mean he won't harm, he or she won't harm. So there is a level of complications in one case. And we have to take care of each and every part very carefully. And then we can arrive to restoration or success or empowerment.
Yeah.
So she fought for her trafficker, and she was able to fight it because she had a job. Her child was safe. Her family was safe.
Mm.
So all multiple things helped her.
Mm. And now, where is she now?
She's still with us.
Yeah.
And recently she received an award also.
Wow.
We nominated her name, and not only that, she has taken a leadership role.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. she faces people, crowd, and she talks, gives her insights to younger girls.
Mm, that's really special. Yeah. When some of these women feel, are able to speak about their empowerment that they feel from the journey, what sort of things do they say about what empowerment means to them?
Yeah, it takes pretty long, in honesty, to speak up their mind.
Yeah.
I think there are several ways they express. I think they say that mentorship has been very important for them. So only rescuing and living in the shelter home and facing the life after 18, once you turn 18, is not only thing they need.
Because once they're 18, shelter home says goodbye, and then they're out in the world.
They have to leave. Yeah. Or maybe in some time extension of 1 year, they get. So they say it is like terrifying that when we leave, and we have to leave shelter home, and the whatever skills we have gathered, and it is extremely competitive life outside, and we are not educated, we don't have solid family support, and sometimes they have children and health issues, and they, most of the time, they don't have accommodation also. They're trafficked from the rural side. So either they have to go back to the village and find their empowerment there, which is possible. Many times we do that as well. So they need, honestly, they need long-term mentorship, hand-holding.
Yeah.
That is what they want. And they also say that they really hate the crime and wish they could punish their trafficker. But many a time they can't think of punishing because they have so much problem in their life.
Yeah, when you say punish, you mean legal action
against the trafficker.
Yeah.
So it needs again some guts, courage.
Yeah.
That no, I am going to pursue and.
And the system, if they're taking legal action in India, how would you describe that system?
So we have experienced that, again, that is another big part, and law enforcement people can give more light on this. But I have seen that the victims, they have to get support from the government or NGOs to find a good lawyer who would fight for the case. Whereas the traffickers, that syndicate, they're much, much stronger. There are some money flow from the top level somewhere, we don't know. They're able to hire quick lawyers and they're quite aggressive. And which is really sad.
Yeah, and is safety an issue then as well?
Safety issues is there. Yeah. Even though the government, the law enforcement has reformed, they have a private room for questions, sessions, etc., interrogation, etc. So things are improving, but it is still a big challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. They still need more support, and the only NGOs, they're stronger, I would say, the other side.
If we talk about the issue itself of trafficking, especially here in Kolkata, and the presence in Kolkata, how big is it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is definitely big, and it is more vulnerable, I would say, because Kolkata borders with Nepal and Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
So cross-border trafficking is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And which makes it a source, transit and destination point of trafficking.
Mm.
So our region is very, very vulnerable. And also that we are only 100 kilometers maybe or less than that from Sundarbans.
Mm.
So, and which is a, you know, it's a natural mangrove forest, and which is extremely get natural disaster prone, where people get displaced or they opt for unsafe migration,
mm-hmm.
which makes trafficking easier, or they're pushed into the trafficking network.
Yeah, and in what, when you say that, what does that look like, being pushed into the trafficking?
Yeah, because they're taking decisions like they're opting for job without even verifying where they're going.
Yeah.
Or sometimes the men of the house, they leave. And they are becoming migrant or somewhere else. Sometimes they don't even often report back to the city. And the women, the children, and the wife or the family, they become vulnerable.
Mm.
So they have to send the young, the children to work, or they have to drop out their school.
Yeah.
That's it.
So that can look like they're being taken advantage of with the work they're doing, but it can also be that it's sexual.
Yeah, it could be anything. Well. It could be labor trafficking.
Yeah.
It could be organ trafficking. It could be child trafficking. They could get into any form of trafficking.
Mm. Would you say this is one of the most vulnerable areas in India for trafficking?
Of course.
Yeah.
Especially climate and trafficking is very much interrelated.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it is about people's vulnerability, families' vulnerability, and economic crisis.
Yeah.
Which leads to take decisions, quick decisions, without verifying a job or marriage situation.
Yeah, yeah. So with the issue of trafficking, are the numbers growing and increasing, and do you think it's becoming
honestly, worse? I can't say, because we don't have any data
that way. Yeah, that would be hard to get.
Yeah, it would be hard to get. Maybe the government departments can't. Because many of the cases are not even registered sometimes.
Yeah.
It happens silently. So we really don't know about the data at this moment.
Yeah.
But we definitely know that crime is thriving.
Yeah.
It hasn't, I think. But we have taken some measures and protections.
You're doing your part in your corner of Kolkata for this huge issue. How do you stay grounded and stay hopeful in what is a massive societal issue? How do you keep going with what you're doing?
I think it bothers me a lot, honestly, because every time I think I feel that I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing enough. And then again, it is constantly counseling myself, talking to myself, talking to our team. But then I think, okay, only a drop in the ocean, but still we should go on. So basically it is demotivating in that sense, but again it is motivating when you tell yourself that even if it is one girl is saved or one boy is saved or one girl is getting better education, I think we are doing our job.
Because you're breaking a cycle.
I'm breaking this. I'm disrupting it.
Yeah. Yes. Least. Yeah, exactly.
And also it is not only this is about working with the survivors directly. We also do some other kind of work for awareness building. So we are continuously, we have academic partnership with around 5 to 10 universities around internationally all over the world. And many students are taking interest in the, you know, business and social good, the intersections.
Yeah.
So I think if the next generation, if we can pass on our knowledge and experience to the next generation or the students, that is also a big thing we can give to the society.
Yeah.
So that also motivates me. I see lots of students, universities, they're taking deep interest to learn this and to identify what they can do, where they are contributing to the crime. So that gives me a lot of satisfaction that I'm working on advocacy, awareness, at least trying to
prevention in
prevention
a way.
Angle. Yeah. Prevention angle.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're on the ground doing that work as well as the seeing the bigger picture.
Yeah. Seeing a bigger picture and at least passing my knowledge, information to as many people as we can.
So if you could talk to someone internationally, if you were talking to a group of international people and who might feel a bit removed from the actual trafficking and seeing what the impact is on the ground, what would you be saying to them about what can help them to understand the issue or do something in their power to contribute to the issue?
So as I said, that it is a crime where multiple stakeholders are involved, knowingly or unknowingly. And I think trafficking is very common in US, UK, Australia, everywhere. And we have to expose this crime. So they can definitely gain knowledge wherever they are. They have to just keep their eyes open, look into the data or search or find out any NGOs. Wherever they are sitting, in any corner of the world, they can get information. So information, learning is big thing, I would say. Learn, try to find and gather. Like you are here, like you have definitely at one point of time looked beyond your circle, right?
And what about consumption of goods? And what do you, for people internationally, like for in Australia, for example, what advice can you give to people about the goods that they consume?
So this is very, very crucial, very, very important. I think we talk a lot about the crime, the survivors and how we are restoring their life. But I think we should look into why the questions. So this is a big part of modern slavery or human trafficking. So we should be definitely very conscious about what we are buying and if it is ethical, if they are paid well, or if they are made by children. And so I think customer has to question.
How do they know with such a fast paced consumption in a society? Is there anything, any advice that you have?
Yeah, I think first of all, awareness. Learn about what is happening and what is the issue. That's number one. And I don't think it is going to be very challenging or difficult with social media handles and with this technology communication system is so sophisticated now. Because we can share anything in the social media. So I think we should definitely tell all the brands that declare where you are sourcing it. Tell us your ethical policy. Tell us about your supply chain. Why can't we do that? Why can't we say it should be, it could be in the social media also. And then we challenge.
I imagine there would be a place for technology to play a pivotal role in that. Are there any good I know I've seen some apps that can help to identify if you're buying something, what the company that you're buying it from, what their history is like, and how ethical they are. Are there any that you're aware of? Any?
I heard that Marks and Spencer, they have, when you go to their website, they have a map about their production units, which means they're, they're telling about their sourcing. Mm. And if you want, you can visit maybe.
Yeah.
Or if they are going through all the compliances, etc., the due diligence process.
Mm.
That is one part. And secondly, I think whenever we are entering a store, there should be some index or something shown in every store.
Mm.
I think we should demand that.
Yeah, it's about what we demand in society. Yeah, isn't it?
Because when you are coming to a store, you are shopping, it should reflect that some key informations on every store.
Yeah.
Which is missing, I guess.
Yeah.
Because all the time you cannot look into website and then find, and maybe some people will do that, but not all.
Yeah.
There should be some few key areas mandatory which should be on the store, any big store.
Is there one area that you would like to see changed, or is there more action to be taken in particular?
Actions definitely. I know government has a big role to play. But I think consumers are the end voice.
Because consumer voice can influence what government does.
Consumer voice is the last thing. Because we are the buyer. We will decide our money where it will go. So I think consumer voice, they should strengthen.
Mm.
And people know where to protest and what you dislike or like or dislike.
Mm.
Consumer voice is very important, and I know it is, a system is there, policies are there at every level. We have to come together and partnerships, collaborations to improve. That is needed.
Yeah. Back to the Destiny. How many employees do you have?
We have around 15.
Yeah. What kind of culture have you created here?
Yeah, this is very interesting. I think from the very beginning, my priority was a joyful working environment, a smart office culture, where you come, work, you can leave, you be your, and it will be leadership oriented, goal oriented, and very much connected to our vision, mission.
Mm.
Very much connected. We can never forget why we are here.
Mm.
Our end goal is maybe disrupting the cycle of exploitation. Mm. So whenever we are stuck, just look and go back.
It's like your North Star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I think the problem is solved. So we definitely believe in a smart office culture, leadership approach, and also it can be a bottom-up approach, because we believe in grassroots leadership, honestly.
Mm.
So it instead of top-down, it could be bottom-up, or it could be both ways working.
Yeah.
Whatever you need.
Yeah. So
grassroots leadership, survivors leadership is the center. They need to be their voice, and they need to take control of their problem. So in the office also we maintain it that way. It's a very happy and joyful workplace.
Mm.
And we make sure it happens. We do a lot of, we don't do it like on a paper, like team building and then team time. It's not like that. I think we make opportunities to laugh, share, and spend time together, and same with the community also.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. And it happens organically because of that.
It is culture. Happening organically
till
now.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you implant the culture.
Mm. Yeah. I can really feel that here.
Really feel that.
I do.
We should keep it that way. But I don't know what happens with the next generation leader, because I believe in passing on leadership.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be forever here and doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Maybe I will take up another vision. This will still be very close to my heart, what I do. But I think there is plenty of thing to do. So maybe I will divert 50% of my time to something little different, but it has to be something for the society and also self-sustainable.
Yeah.
So both ways.
Mm.
So, but I see, I think the next level leadership is also the same way. Everyone nowadays, they are prioritizing a joyful work environment, which is productive, which is sustainable. Mm.
And you welcome, seems like you welcome volunteers to come
very
to
much,
Destiny.
Very much, Because I always think, you know, when I began Destiny, so I used to secretly think one day we will have an email ID and a lot of people going to write to us from all over the world. And so that was a kind of dream kind of.
Yeah.
And then now when I see so many emails, so many people want to come to us and see how do I manage, do we manage time? Then I think of that day.
Wow, that's so nice.
That no, one day I wanted this and this is happening.
Now you probably have to turn away. Do you ever have to turn away volunteers?
We don't have to, honestly.
No,
that's good.
That's good.
Unless they're able to work on our same date or something, then we miss people. Yeah. But otherwise, they are pretty open. And we don't have to struggle too much to accommodate people.
Then. Yeah, yeah. So if anyone wanted to volunteer at Destiny from around the world, and come to Kolkata or offer some expertise even remotely, you welcome that.
Yeah, we welcome that.
Yeah.
But definitely, you know, we look into the time, the skill.
Exactly.
It is what they're expecting. That is very important.
Yeah.
So we make sure that that matches.
Yes.
So we go through a very, discussion process. So we can eliminate people or people can eliminate Destiny and go to somewhere else. So we go through that process.
Because it has to be mutually beneficial
for
both
parts. Yeah, it has to be mutually beneficial to both parts. So I think it's a quite healthy way of recruiting volunteers.
Yeah.
So we get to know like what is expecting. Some people say, no, I'm very professional. I want this date to that date and I want to be really busy. Then we tell them that it is not that place, I think.
Yeah.
Because we are not like feeding 100 people or nursing 100 old people. It is not that kind of, maybe you could go to different place.
Yeah.
It is a lot about, because our success is when you understand about modern slavery, human trafficking, exploitations, a couple of SDG goals. Maybe if you take only 5% of the knowledge, we think that's a successful.
Mm.
So first is understanding of the issue and then understanding the organization. And then whatever way you contribute.
Yeah, that's good. What kind of projects do you have happening at the moment that you could share? Is there anything interesting?
So we are having... So we have a project in one of the red light area, slum and red light area, the children and women. We have a social enterprise where some of the women are manufacturing some fashion goods, etc. And then we also continue going to the shelter homes. We provide some mindfulness, some English learning skills, or providing them some necessary articles what they need. And we have recently got another project in collaboration with US Embassy Kolkata. So they are the grantee, and we will be working on a gender-based violence project with indigenous women. So we will be selecting around 16 indigenous women from Nagaland and Assam.
Mm.
And then we will find 4 mentors from the United States and we will have some session, mentorship session.
Yeah.
How to combat GBV in your own area, etc. So it's a cross-border kind of collaboration where we learn from each other.
And how far into that project?
Yeah. So we began in 1st of August and we have selected almost 16 mentees we have selected. We have mentors also ready. We will be starting our mentorship session from mid-November.
Amazing. Great.
So
we are
very excited about that.
Yeah.
And gender-based violence is very much into related to human trafficking, whatever is happening.
Yeah.
So
it's very aligned. Yeah.
That is something we are very excited about.
Mm, that's cool. And with the social enterprise aspect of Destiny, where you make the products, how much of that fuels the rest of the work that Destiny is able to do and funds the rest of the work that Destiny is able to do?
Yeah, that is also a very good question. So basically what we have seen that people, many people, they have said that they love the idea of this hybrid model, having the social business as well as the non-profit. They like it. So that is, I think, a big big component in our strength of our model. And the social enterprise is actually is also, even though it is a model social enterprise, it's not that we have 100 women working and manufacturing. It's a model, it's a small 10 women unit, and it is a model in a way, like it is, it talks about business value chain and ethical business, and also being careful about people and planet, whoever working, they're working in a good environment, with also products are eco-friendly. So I think it covers a couple of SDG goals. So definitely it is very, very motivating for what we do on the other side.
Yeah.
And it is also, as I mentioned, like it is also like we need, the intersection is very, very important right now. So we like the idea that the business and the social cause is together.
Yeah.
Yet they're separate with their own entity.
Yeah, it's a powerful model.
It's a big, I think, it is an excitement, it is a satisfaction, it is motivating also, like how we are able to.
What advice would you give to youngest Marita, who was innocently starting out destiny reflection? what advice would you give her now, if you could?
I think you should risk, instead of going for a paid job and not taking a adventurous journey, you should actually believe in yourself. Just listen to your inner self and find out. That is one point. And second point, if something goes wrong, like, don't feel disheartened or think that is a only chance I had gone. There will be chances which comes back. So both way, so just take risk. Start, if you want to be an entrepreneur, want to do yourself, don't you risk yourself, do that. At the same time, don't get too disheartened and then you take it, it becomes a mental health issues for many people, when you are not able to reach that far or reach that numbers, or you missed out that funding, or you don't have any business, or you are not able to make partnerships. I think don't get overworked up on all this. Stay there. You can do something in a small scale also. You can do something in a big scale also. So keep a balance.
Good advice. Is there anything else you wanted to share before we wrap up?
I think it's been a lovely journey, and even though, it is a learning. It is a learning, and at the end, I think, it is about contentment. You have to find your, success within yourself, and you have to measure your own success, and instead of brooding. Because when I started, I think I didn't know, like, I would look at some model, visit an organization and think maybe this is what success looks like. But I think from my experience, I think I decide my success.
Yeah, create your own marker for success.
I decide my success.
Yeah.
Experiencing what you do, I think, moving out of your comfort zone, going out places, is very, very important. I think we should know our world and reach out to the people who are in the corners. So I think it is a very interesting journey, and I encourage people to come and take small risk or and explore the world and understand the problems
facing. Yeah, and then you might find your area that sparks something inside you to take action. Thank you, Smarita.
It's been
so wonderful.
Thank you, Rachel. It was lovely to talk to you. I don't know if it makes sense or not, but I just spoke from my heart.
Oh, it speaks. I can hear it loud and clear. Thank you. So I hope you enjoy hearing from Smarita and learning a bit more about Destiny and what they're trying to achieve, and perhaps opening your eyes up a little bit more to the huge systemic issue of trafficking across the world. It was really so, so lovely to see the Destiny team again. It had been 5 years since I'd been back to India, and when I walked back into the Destiny office, it really was the same energy, if not more vibrant than before. I will link to Destiny's social media in the episode notes, and also their website, where you can have a look at the beautiful different products that they make. And if you have any questions or would like to know more about Destiny, I'm sure they would be thrilled to hear from you. And I'll also link to a documentary that's on YouTube. You can watch for free. It's called Stolen Innocence. And this features both Destiny and New Life Foundation, actually, and it's about trafficking in Kolkata. And then in terms of something you can do, I will also link to a website called Shop Ethical. So this is an ethical consumer guide. It's directed towards Australian consumers, and it gives the lowdown on environmental and social records of companies that are behind like common name brands that are common in Australia. You can also buy an app online, which is about $6, where you can actually scan the barcodes of products and it pulls up an ethical rating of the brand. At the very least, check out the website because it's really interesting to play around with, and I'm sure if you're in a different country, you can have a search for something that might be similar relating to your country. But it can just be a really eye-opening exercise to see how some of the companies you might shop regularly with are behaving, and it might just influence which brands you might choose over others for the future. So thank you for taking the time to listen. Please feel free to rate the podcast and share with any friends who this may interest. Sending you love, my fellow humans, wherever you are.